Watchman.
His name is
Watchman.
Al Sharpton.
I got it. Hey!
Good morning, Rev. Good morning, good morning, good morning. Rev? Reverend Al? Is he there? Did he drop? Hello? Okay. He'll call back. Yeah, Rev says that we gotta get rid of the bad police. Weed them out. Because there are good cops, but the ones who stop you for traffic lights and shooting you four times and killing you.
Reverend
Rev,
Al?
You there?
Yeah, good morning.
Hey, Rev. All right. What are we going to do about these bad policemen?
Well, I think that we have got to really, as we continue to march and protest, have it geared toward we have got to deal with enforcement of the law. One, Tom, we need to stop having the investigation and the prosecutions done by local counties and local district attorneys or prosecutors that have an intrinsic relationship with the accused. You can't investigate yourself. These policemen that work with these local prosecutors on other cases and all always have the appearances, if not the fact, that they are not going to be prosecuted correctly. Until a policeman knows he will go to jail for breaking the law, you can talk all you want about changing the culture. They're not going to change. They've got to know.
Right.
Got
you're breaking up. You're breaking up, Reverend Al.
I'm sorry. I came outside the office to do this. Then you go into, once you change the prosecution to where it's independent, which has already been announced now in Baton Rouge, the feds are going to do it. Then you can go into training and changing the culture. The other thing you need is policemen need to live in the city they police. You treat people differently when you don't see them as strangers. When your wife and their wife go to the same supermarket, your kids go to the same school. We're being policed by people that see us as outsiders, as other than us. And I think we need residency laws. And we need to make this the central issue in this year's campaign, not only for president, but for Congress, for the local races, for the governors. Where do you stand on policing? Where do you stand on independent prosecution? Where do you stand on dealing with the disparities in terms of the criminal justice system? We have an opportune time, since the election is a little over 90 days off, to challenge our local officials on this, who've been blocking the president's bill. Everybody's talking about what Obama needs to get done. He can't get it done without the Congress passing the recommendations that they put forward. So now I think we need to turn all of this mobilization, keep it going, but turning also into voting and turn it also into solutions. And I had the honor, I'm from Baton Rouge. I'm going to be at the funeral. Our people have been marching in Baton Rouge since day one with the NAACP. All of that needs to continue, but we need to focus on solving the problem, not just keep going from one incident to the next.
Any advice for marchers?
I think the marchers need to understand that they're marching for a cause to change laws and enforce laws, but they're also marching for victims who've asked them to behave in a way that upholds how they want their loved one to be remembered. We're marching this weekend again for Eric Garner as we continue to have some of our chapters in Louisiana and in Minnesota march. You don't have the right to take my loved one's name and make it look in other than the way that I want them to be remembered because you have a certain attitude or you have a certain feeling. You know, in 3 weeks, we'll be back in Ferguson with Michael Brown's family. And one of the things that bothers me is a lot of people that went through there and did whatever they wanted to do, that family hasn't heard from them in 2 years. We're still with them. A lot of the Eric Garner people, they're still with them. 2 years from now, we will be with the Sterling family in Baton Rouge. So I say to the marchers, don't have a temporary fit. Let's have a long-term movement. But don't forget the victim. The one thing Dr. King never did, they never abandoned Rosa Parks. They never abandoned the families that were killed, Goodman, Cherney, and Swerner. Do not become so self-righteous that you forget you're dealing with real human beings that have their own views and opinions of how they want their movements conducted.
It seems like we're in the middle of a race war.
I think we're in the middle of a showdown around racial attitudes. I don't think it's a race war. I think it's a real showdown on the polarization.
I said it feels like it.
Oh yeah, oh, it definitely feels like that. And when you've got people like Rudy Giuliani and others jumping on TV talking a lot of foolishness, I think it adds to the optics. But the question is, what are we going to do about it? How are we going to solve it? And we cannot let them control the narrative.
Have you talked to the president?
I've not talked to the president. I've been talking to the families. I've been talking. I had the chairman of the Congressional Black Caucus on my TV show yesterday after the aunt. I've been talking to a lot of people in Washington. And I think the president, who just got back last night, will probably be talking to everybody. But again, he's got to be the president for everyone. Clearly, he's got to deal with the killing of these policemen. And clearly, he's got to deal with the killing by policemen. But he has to do it in a way that he does not compromise the case. You've got to remember, if the president looked like he was in any way putting his thumb on the scale with the Justice Department, it would hurt the family of the Sterling family in Baton Rouge and if they take the case in Minnesota. So we don't have a live open case in Dallas because the person that shot the policeman is dead. There is no case. So he's got to deal with standing with the victims without looking like he is presupposing the outcome of an investigation of his Justice Department. So he's got to really be very careful here if we really want to see justice here.
Reverend Al, I said earlier that if we really want to do something about all of these incidents, we have to do something about the guns. Not the gun laws, the laws that allow guns to be sold in this country, particularly the assault weapons. And I had Melody Hobson on earlier. These gun manufacturers, their stock sky high, business is booming. It's a $15 billion business. How do we put these manufacturers of guns that are killing all these people out of business?
I think that you are absolutely hitting one of the crucial things on the head. One, we need to support the Congressional Black Caucus and others on this gun reform. Let's not forget, just 2.5 weeks ago, they were sitting in after Orlando. That's why I said we've got to stop just being episodic. We've almost forgotten Orlando, and 2 weeks we'll forget something else if we don't change these laws. There's no reason why assault weapons should be allowed. There's no purpose for it. You don't need it for hunting. You don't need it for protection. And we saw this in Dallas just like we saw in Orlando. We need to change the gun laws. But again, Tom, we can do it now with a new election.
Right.
This election is not only going to elect a new president, it's going to elect congressmen, state legislators, and they're the ones that need to be told, you will lose if you don't do gun legislation. You will lose if you don't deal with police reform in the Criminal Reform Act. These are the things that we need to be putting front and center. Otherwise, they will say, all right, let them go ahead and raise stand another week or so, and they'll go on to something else. No, we don't need to go on to something else. We need to make this happen by changing the laws, and our leverage is this election.
Are they doing voter registration at a lot of these protests?
They have not. We are beginning to start to do that now. We've had conference calls all weekend. And again, a lot of these civil rights organizations that started these protests here and other places are now beginning to say, fine, we started, we're glad for a lot of the young people that are coming in and other people and our young people, but now let's get down to how we make this permanent. Because Black Lives Matter has been a slogan. It's not just one organization.
Right.
And I think that we've got to really look at this in an organized way of where we go from here. Because, again, I'm looking at Ferguson 2 years later. You've got Silent Voices and Lost Voices and other groups that are there on the ground that have never left, that have been in this. But a lot of people that come through are gone. We can't have drive-by activism. We have to have permanent, solution-oriented activism. And a lot of these young people are committed to that.
Rev, you think this might be the tipping point? I mean, it's been.
I think we've seen babies.
We've seen babies gunned down in kindergarten classes. We've seen worshipers being massacred in Bible study. I mean, we've seen snipers after police. When are we going to get to the tipping point where Congress is going to do something about these guns?
I think that you are absolutely right. It could be the tipping point, but we always say that. The only way we're going to get Congress to do something is when the focus is Congress and not the focus on having the next drama. We have not put the collective pressure on the Congress. That's when we tip, when we get to the tipping point, when we start tapping the right people.
All right, Rev.
All right.
All right, stay on it. I know you will.